Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote, Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. This is really a fun question. Have you ever heard about someone who is the American Laughing Champion? Yes, you heard me right. Laughing Champion. Tell me, would you like to learn more about doing improv comedy? Have you ever thought of doing it? I know I'm so impressed with the people who can stand up and do it. Have you ever heard about the Second City in Chicago? That is an improv company. Can you imagine the ABCs of moving forward? Tell me, do you know what it means to communicate with humor and hope? And when was the last time you heard about a mission called Find the Funny? Or better yet, do you have any questions? Would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful and how to be funny while you're doing it? If you can answer yes or maybe to anyone, then you are in the right place, and I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I will be introducing you to my guest, who is a success coach extraordinaire. She will provide us with wonderful, informative, and inspirational lessons and some really, really great advice. I'm pleased to announce that our show now has over 1.6 million listeners to date. Also, LinkedIn has announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed during 2012. Now, let me tell you about my guest today. She is the founder of Find the Funny Enterprises, founded in 21. The comedic catalyst. She is a trained acting at the Second City in Chicago, and she is a certified laughter yoga leader and has more than 15 years of public speaking and marketing experience. She conducts humor, laughter, communication presentations, and workshops for healthcare organizations and corporations. In addition, she teaches public speaking and improvisation to youth adults and performs comedy. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show today Julie Ostro. Hi, Julie. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, January. Hi, how are you?
Oh, wonderful. I was, listening, and I wasn't sure that I had you on the show here because I was having a little communication problem. Let's talk a little bit about how you got into comedy. Were you a funny kid when you were growing up?
Well, you know what? I was, and I would always laugh at certain things that no one else thought was funny. And at times, yes, I would look at the obscure way of how something is done, and I found myself being the only one who would laugh. And then, what is that? Why is she looking at that? Why does she think that's funny? And then growing up, in college, I remember someone says, oh, you should be on Saturday Night Live. And I thought, oh, yeah, sure. Anyone can make anybody laugh. And that's where my stumbling block was, believing that I had the gift of laughter. That's the key, when you believe you have that gift, whatever it is.
Uh-huh. Now, when you were in school, were you the class clown?
I wasn't. As a matter of fact, January, I came across a report card that I think would amaze everybody who knows me now. The teacher wrote, "Julie is very quiet in class." it's probably notarized too, but I don't think many people who know me now would even believe that anyone ever wrote that. So,
how did your humor evolve? I mean, how did you get the courage to go with the Second City in Chicago? I'm in total awe of that because I did one stand-up presentation myself, and I'll tell you, I was terrified. And when it was over, I thought, oh, my gosh, I'll never be able to do that again. I was very brave to do it, but it's difficult, isn't it?
Well, to answer your question about how I got involved in Second City, and I was working in marketing in the city and working with a lot of 20-somethings, you know, about my age, similar sense of humor. And one woman I worked with, Jennifer Bullock, hello out there, she was the one who said, "You have the personality and the quick wit for Second City. You should really sign up." And sometimes it takes just one person like that, maybe an acquaintance like that, to say, you can do that. So once I signed up for the classes, I went for the basic level classes and auditioned and got into the conservatory program. Really formative years, 3 solid years of taking improvisational classes there. Really made an impact in my life, really.
I'm sure. Now, what kind of an audition process do you have to go through to get into Second City?
Well, the Second City, the improvisational courses, just to clarify, are different from the main stage. But that audition that we did for the conservatory program, they gave us a couple little tips, and that was don't come on stage with a plan in your head and don't script something out. The most important elements are to be present with the other people on the stage and create magic in the moment and build on what the other people are bringing to the scene. So it basically, to answer your question, the audition includes being in the present moment and being willing to play.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you doing the audition with other people? Are you by yourself? Or what kind of do they give you a premise to start with? How does one begin to audition for Second City?
Well, the audition usually included three or four of us, and they would give us a scene based on, get a relationship between these two people and a relationship between these two people and maybe a location that could fit on the stage, go. Mm-hmm. And it was, and that, when I lead improvisational workshops for corporations and various organizations, that's the key element that I tell them. You might have a budget project you're working on. You might be working on your marketing plan, but that all that's in your head doesn't belong here. Because you need to be present with the people in your group, say in you know, in your group or other actors, and you can really get gems from other people by listening and being present.
Oh, wow.
It's a really good – oh, sorry.
That just sounds very exciting. I get an adrenaline rush when I just hear you talking about it.
Oh, well, good, good. I consider improvisation, when I take that to the organizations and corporations, I think of improv as brainstorming in action.
Okay, I like that. Now, you were in corporate life yourself, and how did you make the switch from corporate life to becoming a comedian? That must have been very difficult, because, I mean, corporate life was your bread and butter. That's how you fed yourself. That's how you paid the bills. What prompted you to make that switch?
Well, I will tell you, and I'm thinking that a lot of the listeners have experienced something similar to what I'm going to share, that I went along my path going along and climbing the corporate ladder, thinking that that's what I should be doing. And I just used air quotes, what I should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm creative, I can write marketing plans and of that nature. But when I discovered this, that I really can make people laugh and I really am good at improv, I wanted to find something that I could do that would match up with my desire. So I would then pursue something along the humorous and creative avenue. And then I get a little scared, and I jump back onto that corporate ladder. Like, well, I should be going into the corporate world. So I almost picture it like a DNA helix that, so you can picture that. Like, one side of it is my corporate life, and that it interjects with my humor path that I want to take, and vice versa. And the more I went back into the corporate world, the more miserable I became, because the minute I sat down in the new cube, I felt like I was back in a prison. Let me clarify. I was never in prison, but cube life prison.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Under the fluorescent lights and in your little cube, and it's not a very humorous place to be, is it?
Correct. And I would laugh, and I would laugh by myself, looking at maybe an email that someone sent me that wasn't supposed to be funny, but I thought I found the funny in it. I would just laugh out loud. People would stop by my cube and wonder who I was laughing with or what joke I read. And then, exactly, and when I shared this with the talk or and someone else in the audience who actually worked with me at that time, he was nodding his head, like, yep, she does that all the time. She just laughs by herself, and we don't get it.
That's a great story, and I'm sure that a lot of people listening to us right now are out there laughing to themselves, and I think hearing your story will give them encouragement and inspiration. You know, we're going to take a break right now and hear about your host, and when we come back with Julie Ostro, we're going to talk about how she made the leap to find the funny and how she left corporate world to become a stand-up comedian. She is one of the bravest people I know. We'll be right back with Julie. Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who fearlessly shared their stories? People who have priceless personalities? I've been fortunate to host a talk show called January Jones Sharing Success Stories, and it's been my privilege to interview hundreds of guests. In my new ebook, we're talking about people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, and even polygamy. Then there are my guests dealing with physical struggles such as blindness, cancer, and birth defects. All of my guests have been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. I look forward to sharing them with you in my new ebook, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones. The introductory offer of $4.99 is now available at Amazon.com. Order it today. Welcome back with my wonderful guest, Julie Ostro. And her personal motto, find the funny, helps her to find the humor in everyday moments in life's most difficult situations. Now, Julie, tell us, how did your family feel about your new career?
I think when I know they're supportive, I think to an extent, and I can't put words in anyone else's mind, but this is what I get, that when someone else steps out on that ledge and jumps and knows they're going to fly, but other people's fears can kind of limit that. So I think that's what I've experienced when and I should add and interject that I am the youngest of six, and even though I am over a certain age, I will always be the youngest of six. So I think, yes, whether I'm 50 or 60 or 16, the youngest of six, not always as encouraging right away, and that was hard because it's not the same. It's not what everyone else should be doing. They're the air quotes. You know, wouldn't it be easier if you just went back to the corporate world and you've got insurance and then get with a good, stable company that's reliable? No. Mm-hmm. No. I'm going to whine in response. No. It doesn't work because, no, there I am. There, I'm 12. So sometimes we do go back into our old roles. But so to answer your question, I haven't always felt the support, but I would say trickle of support because I think their fears have maybe played a stronger role, like, oh, you can't do that because, maybe subconsciously, I haven't stepped out. They might be thinking, I haven't stepped down and done something even as brave as that, so I don't know if you can do that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, it certainly does to me. And, you know, I was the baby of my family, and I know you're the baby of your family, And I always felt a responsibility to kind of cheer people up and make people laugh. Did you feel that way when you were growing up?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. I did. And there was, you know, growing up in a house of six kids, there's always something going on. There's some tragedy or drama. And I always, I found the humorous. I found the funny. Even, well, in my 20s, when my mother passed away, we even found humor, not to be disrespectful, but we found humor at her funeral. And there was a moment when something odd happened, and I can explain if we have time because it's quick, but all six of us kids ended up laughing. And everyone else might have looked at us and thought, why are they laughing at their mother's funeral? But it was a release and a also a connection, and that's what humor and laughter can do.
That, you know, I find that happens so often when people are at funerals or events like that. The humor is what gets you through those difficult, dark times. And I think that's a very common theme in life. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when I've shared that story of when a few of us were sitting and talking to some other relatives, and one of my sisters was saying goodbye to some old neighbors, and they were leaving out the back door. But we didn't know that, but we only heard my sister say, thanks for coming. So we all looked at each other. We thought my sister was saying, thanks for coming, to my mom. So just in that, exactly. So it's just, there was that, what's happening? That seems odd. And then we all laughed. I mean, we didn't say those words because we just laughed. We knew it was odd. And then laughter erupted at the funeral home.
How wonderful and how therapeutic. That's incredible. Thank you for sharing that. Now let's talk a little bit about AATH, American, the Association of Applied Therapeutic Humor. That's where I met you the first time, and I just thought you were the funniest person there when I met you the first time. Now, we both are involved in this wonderful, wonderful organization. I did not get to go to their convention this year in San Diego, which I was very sad about missing. But you did go, and I heard that you became the American Laughing Champion. Can you tell us about how that came about?
Right now I'm shaking my head in amazement. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. But yes, this association I've belonged to, I think, for about 6 years, and you and I met at the Las Vegas show. Mm-hmm. And this association, as you may have shared on other shows, focuses on the humor, the connection between humor and healing. That's the short end of it. And one night of the conference, they had co-hosted this laughing championship, which was created by filmmaker and psychologist from Canada, Albert Nirnberg. And the championship, the competition involved specific types of laughs, which we did for about, I would say, 20 seconds, and the three judges made their determination then who would be eliminated, say two people eliminated after each round. And then there were face-offs for laughter, and that's what got me, that when I did the fake laughter, and then I went back to the wall, and that was fine, and my laughter stopped. But this is what is so fascinating to me. To the point when I was face-to-face with Anne, a new AATH member, and I was making eye contact with her, and we were almost mimicking each other with the laughing, not in a condescending way, but the eye contact and the laughing together was what got me, and that's what started my, I would say, my train of uncontrollable laughter and helped me win the championship.
How many people competed in this? Because, you know, when I come next year, I want to compete for sure.
Well, and there were 16 people competing, and I'm not sure where the competition is going to be, how they're coordinating that. But I would say that we would have a lot more than 16 people with the momentum that we've been developing since the conference.
It sounds like so much fun. Now, you're a motivational speaker, a stand-up comedian, and you're a laughter yoga leader. Could you tell us a little bit about your experience with laughter yoga, which is pretty much the same as a laugh competition, don't you agree?
Yes, it is. And you could say that that I, along with the other competitors, led the whole group, the whole audience in laughter yoga, really. Because laughter yoga is laughing for no reason, and it becomes real laughter. And whether you're laughing a fake laugh or a real laugh, your body does experience the medicinal benefits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you familiar with who created and developed the laughter yoga concept?
Yeah, well, Jeffrey Breyer spoke about it when he was on the show. Could you share that with our listeners?
Sure. And he trained under Madan Kataria. And Madan Kataria is a medical doctor in Mumbai, India. And he had created the group in 1995 after having read some articles of Norman Cousins, who had written the book Anatomy of an Illness. And, mm-hmm. and that gentleman had written that if I'm laughing for no reason, my pain is going away. So what if, so then Dr. Kataria took that same concept and thought, well, what if I got together a group of people and they told jokes and laugh? What if that would create some health benefits?
Mm-hmm.
So he created a joke group, and it only lasted 2 weeks because either the jokes got a little racy or they ended up repeating the jokes. So then he thought, well, what if we just laugh for no reason? And as a result of him starting that whole campaign, if you will, there are more than 7,000 laughter groups worldwide.
Wow. Wow. Now, what are the benefits health-wise to laughter? Could you share those with our listeners?
Oh, sure. Some of your listeners might be familiar with the stress hormone cortisol, which when you are stressed, it creates more, and it actually inhibits your metabolism. Whereas the laughing, it creates more of the positive hormones and chemicals throughout your body, and it helps lessen that chemical.
Mm-hmm.
It increases the oxygen in your blood. It also allows people to think more clearly. That's what's fascinating about this association, AATH, that there are so many researchers, medical doctors, really important people in the field of the humor, laughter connection and the healing connection, that there's something going on in the brain when we're laughing. And Albert Nirnberg, who I mentioned, created the championships. He also had discovered and had found in research that dopamine is created or released when you're laughing.
Okay.
So, mm-hmm. and that's why when he works with groups of recovering addicts, he leads them in laughter yoga. It's fascinating.
Okay.
I know I provided more information, but it's fascinating to me.
Oh, it is, and it is a wonderful organization. And what I love most about it are the clowns. Could you share what the clowns do with the Association of Applied Therapeutic Humor?
I know that the clowns, a lot of them are part of Quit Curing Clowns, and in their own cities, there are clowns that go into hospitals and nursing homes and smile and laugh and play with residents. And it's also a really great campaign that they have at every AATH conference, wherever it is, a group of caring clowns or people who aren't caring clowns but want to tag along, they visit a nursing home or hospital. And they bring joy and laughter. And even if it's just handing out red noses to the patients, it brings a smile to their faces.
I know. I love the red noses. Everyone at the conference wears red noses. And it just, I don't care who you are or where you are, when you see someone walk up to you with a big red clown nose, you will laugh. It's a guaranteed for sure laughter prompt. You know, we're going to take a break and hear from one of our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the things that Julie speaks. I Am a Voice, the ABCs of Moving Forward, Communications, some of her presentations and stand-up routines. We'll be right back with Julie Ostro.
Could your commute or daily exercise routine use a boost? When was the last time you really got the giggles? June is audiobook month, and the producers of Yikes, Another Quirky Audiobook, invite you to tune in, turn on, and let loose a few good laughs. Yikes, Another Quirky Audiobook is about a marijuana enthusiast named Blue McKenna who gets involved in a reality TV show as a way to cure an apocalyptic case of writer's block. A conglomerate of kooky contestants invades the polygamous community of Naval, Utah to compete in a reality show called Yikes. Things get sticky when Blue McKenna's hemp garden is ignited during an ill-fated seance. Find out what's going down in the desert in Yikes, another quirky audiobook. This is Adele Park inviting you to celebrate Audiobook Month on the funny side. Visit www.yikesaudiobook.com. That's www.yikesaudiobook.com.
Highly recommend Adele's audiobooks, Yikes and Jitters. If you're going on a car trip this summer, put them in the car, and I guarantee you will laugh all the way. Now, Julie, let's talk a little bit about some of the presentations that you do with your Find the Funny organization. Could you talk a little bit about when you do I Am a Voice, your speaking series?
Yes, I have spoken to, like I mentioned, groups and organizations and also at community colleges. So I Am a Voice specifically, I help people focus on listening to them first and then get building up their confidence for public speaking. A lot of people I have in the class are not familiar, or I should say comfortable with speaking up, and it comes with self-confidence, and that's what we work on. And what I, of course, I include humor in it, and I always bring Laffy Taffy. So I have everyone introduce themselves, and they read a joke or two off of the Laffy Taffy wrappers. So I said, this is easy. You don't even have to think of a joke. And they're really stupid jokes, like submitted from Sue, age 5, from Tucson, Arizona. But
okay, so this addresses the fact that sometimes people in your life are not hearing you. They're not listening to you. So you're helping people speak out with their inner voices from their hearts clearly and confidently. How long does this course is? It's a four-week course. So how many people do you usually have with this?
A smaller group is even more effective because I can give one-on-one attention to a lot more people while they're working on some exercises. But I can give the course to 5 people, 10 people, or even 20 people or 100 people because it just can break off into groups as well.
Okay. It sounds fantastic. Now, another series that you do are the ABCs of Moving Forward workshop. Tell us about what you focus on in this workshop.
Working on putting what is in the past, and the ABCs also stands for what I call all baggage carries through, because if you jump from A to point C thinking, oh, just move on, and that's what we were taught in my family, just move on. You know, if there's an issue, just move on. Well, are you moving on over something or around it, or are you actually plugging through that baggage? And working through that and dissecting it, not saying lamenting your whole life about it, but really looking at what is the issue and then moving forward instead of just keep shoving it underneath that living room rug.
Yeah, I think that's a big problem for a lot of people, that baggage that you've carried with you your entire life, and moving forward in healthy, nourishing ways that will allow you to receive and experience the abundant gifts that are waiting for us. That's a big lesson for everyone to learn, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm still learning it. And I know that I know that the more I teach, the more I learn. The more I lead laughter yoga, the more I laugh and feel lighthearted. I mean, here's a good example of that. When I led laughter yoga at one particular assisted living facility, I had hurt my knee playing tennis, and it really hurt, and also to drive an hour into the city of Chicago, it was hurting my knee as well. So while I was giving the laughter yoga session, the pain was going away. At the end of the day, I thought to myself, my knee doesn't hurt. So two things. I'm focusing on the group connection and having everyone involved and laughing together, and I'm not focusing on the pain. So that's also what I focus on when I'm incorporating laughter yoga into my presentations.
Now, tell me, do you do improv still? Are you still doing stand-up?
I am. I do stand-up for, I've done stand-up for a surprise birthday party. So I've been the, even in clubs as well, some smaller clubs, and improv. I'm involved in a couple of improv troupes. I know that keeps my, that wets my whistle, so to speak. And what I really focus on is incorporating the stand-up, improvisation, and laughter yoga in my presentations to the corporations, organizations, and various groups.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Now, let's talk a little bit about your workshop, Communication Through Improvisation. What will people get out of that workshop?
That is focusing on using the rules of improv that I touched on at the very beginning of our talk when we were talking about Second City, and that is using the rules of improvisation, which include being present, being in the present moment, listening to the other person, other people in the scene, and also listening to what ideas you have instead of editing yourself down to, oh, no, that's not a good idea. So people learn how to be present when they're listening and communicating with other people. It's vital in a lot of the corporations where I've worked. It could really save organizations.
Okay, and then you also do another workshop called Presentations and Stand-Up Routines. Tell us about that workshop.
I've done that a lot for kids who want to get comfortable with telling jokes. So they might have, you know, yes, like, I've got a really good joke, but I don't know if I can do that. So teach them how to be comfortable standing up and speaking in front of a group. So I incorporate the public speaking skills in addition to finding the funny, helping them find the funny in their lives and then sharing those stories. Because I think what I do as a comedian, a stand-up comedian, I don't just do a 1-2 punch joke. I tell stories. I tell stories about what it was like to get my first mammogram. And then I make sure that I say, oh, I smile, and I make sure that I look my best. So with little jokes like that, especially to women's groups, it helps them take a look at the lighter side of those situations.
Okay. What was it like when you got your first mammogram?
Well, you know, one of my mammograms I got at this hospital, walk up the stairs, and although the mammogram, it's the breast center is what it was called, but as soon as you walk up the stairs, the double doors automatically open. And I thought, oh, well, that's a nice welcoming. So I play with it. So I go up to the receptionist, and I said my name strongly and proudly, and I said, my name is Julie Oster. I'm here to get my boob smashed. And she said, oh, yes, you have a 10 o'clock appointment. And then they also, it always cracks me up when they're trying to have a conversation when it's really uncomfortable. Like, oh, so I still try to have, still talk when I can't really breathe. I found myself making other people feel more comfortable because it's not a very, it can be kind of traumatic for some people because what are these results going to be? And the technicians are usually pretty serious, and I found myself making them laugh. When I was in the waiting room, I did have to get another test after that, and we're all wearing our white gowns. And there are about 10 other women in the room, and no one is saying a word. But I speak up, and I said, oh, my gosh, we're all wearing the same outfit.
And, I love it.
And a few women did laugh. Most people just went back to their magazines, but I did see smiles. And then one woman piped up and she said, yes, and we all have really horrible taste.
Terrible, terrible. Now, you know, I know it was very difficult for women comedians coming up through the ranks. What is it like now? Is it still difficult for women out there?
Sometimes. Just, I find myself having to make sure that I'm even stronger than I know I am. And that's a fine line, because when we women are strong, we use serious power, it can scare people. Because, I don't know about you, but I was raised to, don't say you're mad, say you're just a little frustrated. Or, you shouldn't really say that, because it might hurt someone else's feelings. Well, there I was expressing maybe my frustration in something. But and as far as the business world, I think it's important to maintain confidence and know that you're good and know that you're witty. So if you're in the humorous field, know that you have it. You have the gift of humor and laughter. And if you've been in a room where you've made someone laugh, that's a gift. Not everyone can do it. So the bottom line of that is don't downplay your fear. Don't downplay it. Because I've done it. I think I'm telling myself.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's wonderful advice. You know, we're going to take a break in here, and another word from one of our sponsors, a wonderful organization that we both support. I'll be right back with Julie Ostro.
Second time around can be better. Second timers try harder. Looking to have a rewarding second marriage? Any marriage. Read Successful Second Marriages by Patricia Bubash. She interviews a variety of couples that have succeeded in their second attempt. Each story reflects that the second marriages can be tough going, yet be the best of the best. Learn from these couples who share their intimate stories, how they struggled with difficulty and have thrived. Stories such as, "Our kids drove us apart. We separated 5 times in 4 years. 4 months into our marriage, my 85-year-old father-in-law came to live with us. 1 year into our marriage, I was diagnosed legally blind. Death of my eldest child brought grief, depression into our new marriage." Successful Second Marriages is encouraging, hopeful, inspiring. Available on Amazon.com in book form and ebook. Read Pat's musings at www.successfulsecondmarriages.com.
Welcome back with my guest, Julie Ostro, and she is the founder of Go Find the Funny. Julie, could you share your website information with my listeners?
Sure. It's gofindthefunny.com.
Okay.
So we're gofindthefunny.com.
And what will people find at your website?
Well, they'll find my interview, which was with the Fox TV in San Diego right after the competition. You'll see,
oh,
I was really jazzed. And also radio interviews that I had right after the competition with CBS in San Francisco and a couple of Canadian radio programs.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And
so
also a laughter yoga demo.
Yeah, and so being the American Laughing Champion, has that changed your life?
It has. And I believe that I can take this as a platform for the next step, because I believe that when I was winning that championship, I know in my heart, when I was winning that laughing championship, I was in the moment, I was in my joy, and really the whole room went away. I wasn't concerned with what anyone thought or what was going to happen or what was going to happen when I fell on stage. I mean, you could even look on YouTube for laughing championship, and then the video of the competition is there, and you'll see I lose control of my laughter. So that's what they'll see, and also how to book me for their organizations.
Okay, and you are an inspirational speaker, comedian, laughter yoga leader. I highly recommend people booking you. Could you share with us a little bit what's coming up for AATH next year?
Yes, we have a conference coming in Vincennes, Indiana, where there are going to be even more researchers and doctors and specialty presentations focusing on various organizations. So whether you're a social worker, doctor, or teacher, you will be able to go to tracks, conference tracks that are going to be targeted for your group. And every time I go to the conference, I learn something new.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a wonderful opportunity to network with like people, people who have humor and hope, and that they apply it to their careers and helping others. Share with us a little bit about Red Skelton angle that the next conference is going to be promoting.
Yeah, they'll be focusing on the history and what humor he brought to and what he contributed to the world of comedy. And the conference itself is going to be held at the Red Skelton Museum, where there's going to be wonderful facilities, where they're going to be even auditoriums, where they're going to have a lot of the programs.
And I will be there, and I know that Julie will be there, and I'm certainly not going to miss it next year. Julie, let's talk a little bit about what success means to you. And if you have any regrets or advice for people out there who are thinking about becoming stand-up comedians.
Okay. For me, success means listening to my inner voice. And there are so many times when I hadn't listened to my inner voice and I went along with what I should have done. And I could, you know, and again, I use air quotes on that, what I should be doing.
Good morning, Carol.
the regret I have. And I tread that question lightly, January, because I don't want to live my life with regrets. But the one thing I would have changed is going gusto without any doubts at all. And then on the flip side of that, the flip side of that would be the doubts help me make sure I'm taking the right step. So for me to make some alterations that would improve my life, it would be don't wallow in the squalor of the doubts. Don't wallow in that, oh my gosh, I should have done that, or maybe it wasn't that good. Well, guess what? I am good, and I'm on the right path, and I'm doing the right thing. And if I think I didn't do something right, well, I'm going to tweak it for the next time. Whether that means, in my presentations, how I'm communicating with my fiance or my other family members, then I can tweak it for next time. But just, and then if I were to regret that I lived my corporate life while regretting not following the other path, I have to take that information as I needed to do that to really know I don't want to keep going back and forth and doubting myself.
Yeah, those are the lessons that we learn. And, you know, we say regrets, but actually those are the things you have to experience to go forward. Don't you agree?
Oh, good point. Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Now, when we're talking about comedy, what kind of advice do you have for any young women or men out there who are listening to you and thinking, my gosh, she is so fearless. She's gone forward. She's done stand-up. She's been with Second City. What advice do you have to any wannabe comics out there?
Yeah, we're all done.
That you have a gift. If you think you have something funny to say, you do. Chances are that there's, on your way to work, you see something funny. And even if it's not funny, what if you were to combine it with something else that is somewhat funny? And that's like taking a simple idea and adding another element to it and combining it that in a way that no one else would. So I believe that if you have a desire on your heart, that it belongs there. It might require some tweaking. Maybe talk to some other people who are actually in your area, and you can take some comedy writing classes and help you ferret out the funny. Because the funny is everywhere. In the line of the grocery store, it's funny. So with everyday life, you can find the humor. So with the upcoming comedians, here's the thing. Don't let anyone else tell you that you can't do it. You know, keep going. Yes, keep going. Don't listen to those people who are afraid of doing what you have the courage to do.
Now, the comedy writing classes, where would you find those? At the community colleges, or where did you go for that type of work?
When I did my first stand-up routine, it was because I would just shoot off these funny comments and funny observations, and someone had told me, you should do stand-up, and I said, I don't think I can do that. And they said, well, why don't you just go, it was when I was living in Wilmington, North Carolina, and they said, well, why don't you just go to Myrtle Beach? No one knows you there. And I said, well, maybe I'll just do it. I put in my calendar, like 3 months out, perform one stand-up routine, and I didn't look at that calendar day until like a week after, and it was surprising to me that I had written it on the calendar that I was going to do it, and I ended up doing it. So, but to answer your question, community colleges, theaters, there's a lot of places. You could even just Google comedy classes.
Tell me, how long was your first stand-up routine? How long were you up there on stage?
It was 10 minutes, and I was petrified.
10 minutes, oh my gosh.
10 minutes, and I was petrified. And whereas a couple of months ago, I gave a 45-minute stand-up routine for a woman's surprise 40th birthday party, and the time flew by.
Oh, wow.
So I made a lot of progress over the years, in my eyes.
Yeah, so when you do it, it's obviously not rehearsed because you're improv, so you just kind of have topics that you pick and choose from and run with it?
Yes, absolutely. I have a topic, an outline of what I'm going to say, but no two presentations of mine are ever the same because, like you said, with the improv, I feed off of the audience. So I make sure I make eye contact with almost everyone there, and they might even shout out an answer, a.k.a. heckle. Well, I don't ignore it. I incorporate that into my routine.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about your routines, what was the worst thing that ever happened to you when you were doing stand-up? Share that quickly.
I would say the dead silence and the looks on people's faces where they did not get what I was saying.
Okay.
And just move on to the next.
Move on. Well, I hope you will move on and keep going, and I hope you will come back many more times to be on our show and share your wonderful Find the Funny stories with my listeners.
Absolutely, January. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, we've loved having you, and we hope our listeners have enjoyed our show today. Julie is quite amazing. My upcoming guests for the rest of the week are all exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and they will astonish you, just like Julie did. This is the show where you hear inspiring information that will help you to become successful, too. I would love to welcome you to our wonderful No Whining world. We love sharing our stories, struggles, and our secrets for success. It's our hope that we can encourage all of our listeners to emulate our guests like Julie today and every day. Remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, I want all of you out there to please stop whining and start smiling and then start sharing our success show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Again, thank you to my wonderful guest today, Julie Ostro. This is January Jones thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Story. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity, plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.
I think she finished. Yeah, she did.